be sure and tell them Large Marge sent you.
Thank you, Large Marge. How come I'm... I don't know. It's just everything sounds overdriven in my headphones.
Right, I don't know. I don't know. Turn the thing your way. It might help.
Well, I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
Doesn't matter. This is still Ghostly Talk, overdriven or not.
And I'm sounds still... good over here, man.
Wow, it's loud.
It sounds really good over here.
I'll just turn the volume down.
Hey, and, there you go.
And I'm still Doug.
I'm Scott L.
Well, I'm Will.
Who are we?
Who are you?
Well, I guess we're going to find out. One of the things we were talking about, and Paul, well, of course, we're on the phone with Paul Eno, author of Footsteps in the Attic. And I think, isn't it footstepsintheattic.com is your website?
Yeah, that's one of the shamelessly self-promoting websites. Yeah.
Oh.
And where I come from, you'd say Large Marge.
Large. I don't know if I could do it. But Large Marge. But yes, we were talking, and we were talking about, like, how young we are, right? I mean,
yes.
Well, that was sort of a corollary of what we were talking about. And and the human race is really, really young. And I noticed that, oh, wow, many years ago I was watching something on some channel, probably PBS, and they showed a history of the Earth. And it started, you know, 4 billion years ago, and then it showed where humans evolved, and we were just this little teeny sliver at the very far right of the history of the Earth. I mean, a teeny little sliver against this, you know, huge, long timeline. Well, I experienced the same feeling of insignificance just last night, or I think it was last night or the night before, and one of the TV shows that or TV stations that I watch, which are relatively few, so it was either Travel Sci-Fi, Discovery, or National Geographic, right? Or the Learning Channel. It was one of those, because that's my whole universe as far as entertainment goes. They showed the evolution of, which is a hot topic right now, evolution, intelligent design kind of thing going on. That's a very, very hot topic at the moment, and I thought, oh, I got to watch that, because, you know, that's what everyone's talking about on the internet. Intelligent design. And so I watched this show, and they started 4.4 billion years ago, and they showed, like, the single cell organisms and stuff like that, and they said Theia. This was the first I'd heard of this, at least consciously. Theia was some wandering planet in our solar system, crashed into the Earth 4.4 billion years ago. Part of it became our moon, and the Earth became, like, superheated and this glowing red rock of some kind floating in space. And then from that, everything developed from that big energy blast. So what happens is, starts with this, and then it would roll a couple, like 100 million years from then. So you go from 4.4 million years to 4.3 million, or to 3.4 million years. I don't know, but it would be hundreds of millions of years.
Yeah.
And then they would show the different things that evolved. And the scary things were, of course, the scorpions that were, like, 20 feet long.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun to try to deal with, yeah.
And then there was a spider, and they had a name for the spider. I don't remember what the name was. Because I was hiding behind the... Yeah, big spider. It was the size of, like, a human or whatever.
Oh, God!
Or a human head or something. I don't know, but it was huge. And they showed all these weird creatures from... Oh, that was...
I'm sorry.
Professional
sounding. I broke
that. Yeah, thanks. But this was before humans... This was actually before dinosaurs. And then what Paul mentioned was the dinosaurs were on the Earth for, what was it, like 200 million years or something?
Oh, roughly, yeah.
And of course, we shouldn't have been around at that time. And then we show up for our little teeny itty-bitty piece of humanity of time right now. Yeah. This was it. I mean, we're in a very small speck of time when you look at a timeline that stretches out 4.4 billion years.
Well, yeah, we're on the top end of it right now as far as existence goes. Could that be, because you say this, you've said it a few times, Doug, this idea of how insignificant humans are as we know it on this planet right now are as far as how long we've been here in regards to how long the planet's been here theoretically, because we
that's what, you know, where my feeling of insignificance comes from.
But but Paul mentioned
how
this,
new we are.
Yeah, well, Paul mentioned this thing about time. Okay, and there's this idea of time. Now we know that, you know, boredom is a very fun thing. You know time seems to go by slowly when you're bored, right?
Or quickly when you're not.
When you're not, yes. Exactly, and vice versa. Our perception of time, it seems, makes us insignificant in a way, or makes us feel insignificant when you look back at all these years and all of these things that have happened to this planet, so to say. This idea that and Paul mentioned this too, it's this idea of time, and I want to expand on this if we can a little bit. Paul.
Yes, sir.
Okay. There is this, you said, what the statement you made, you said, was that we should not, you know, it's more has to, this idea of ghosts and poltergeists and the big picture has to do with time. I'd like to run with this a little bit. I mean, I want to know more of what the idea is behind this, if we can get into that.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, time can be a bomb of a word in the sense that it's a pregnant term, okay?
Yeah.
Time, as we understand it, as we experience it, and this is from Einstein, General Theory of Relativity, is a function of our consciousness. It doesn't really have any objective existence. The whole point of this multiple worlds theory is that all this stuff, all these possibilities, all these worlds, all these us's, as it were, exist side by side all at once. What to us is the past is simply another world in which it's 1825.
Yeah.
Or... let me give an example of why I believe this, like this.
Okay.
I always ask regression therapists, and everybody knows, I'm sure, what a regression therapist is, and I'll explain it. These are people, of course, who will take you back through hypnosis to quote-unquote past lives, right? So I figured, well, if these theories are correct, and, you know, and if hypnotism does what we think it does, then there should be memories of future lives, too.
Okay.
Because, all right, and there are. I made it a point whenever I would speak to her, and I still do sometimes, to ask people when they regress, people, okay, do they ever describe a world that you don't recognize? Mm. Very often they'll say, it's funny you should ask. And so one person told me, well, gee, just last week I asked somebody what year it was, and they said it was 2148.
Oh, my God.
So I said, okay. So, again, you know, if this is what it appears to be, and if, you know, hypnotism is legit, then we can have some arrows in our quiver for the space-time theory here that, you know, past and future don't mean a thing. When I go into a house, especially one that's got what I refer to as a parasite or even maybe a poltergeist, and we will sometimes go into a place where you just get a headache. Suppose, you know, it's like somebody's been hit on the head, and that's simply empathy across space-time. And it could be something that hasn't happened in the house yet, or maybe hasn't happened at all in that part of space-time, in that particular area. And, again, it gets pretty heavy, and it gets confusing sometimes, but it always seems to work out when you approach the cure from those sorts of interpretation of the symptoms, so to speak.
Mm.
Now, I should say, now you were talking about the human race being very young. Yeah, we're only about 2 million years old. And how come we only experience ourselves in maybe one of these universes at a time? Well, we don't always experience ourselves at one universe at a time. Generally, we do day to day, because at the point of evolution at which we seem to be, we probably can't handle anymore. But our subconscious knows, and our ancient, most remote ancestors and religions and beliefs seemed to know, at least to some degree, that this is how the world was constructed.
Uh-huh.
As well as working in history and stuff and theology and philosophy and all that stuff, I also did a lot of work in abnormal psychology as a student, specifically to work in this field. Because obviously, you know, you got to get past the idea if somebody's nuts, then maybe it's not paranormal, you know. This sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I would ask a number of questions that my professors didn't like. When I would work, say, at the Ogdensburg State Hospital in New York State as a grad student, or rather as an undergrad, and Norwich State Hospital in Connecticut as a graduate student, I would ask, you know, after having looked into the eyes of a schizophrenic,
mm-hmm.
there is sometimes the most knowing, disconcertingly knowing look. And I would wonder, is the condition of schizophrenia, which of course can include hearing voices and seeing things,
mm-hmm.
is this a result of a chemical imbalance in the brain? Or is this condition opening doors in this person's mind that the rest of us can't open anymore or yet? You know, and especially the thing with the schizotypal, multiple personalities, the dissociative identity disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible these people are literally experiencing real lives? They are living in parallel worlds? Or are they nuts?
Well, that's the thing right there, Paul, and this is what I've been saying this for years to people. For example, schizophrenics, that's a good example. I've always said the statement, you know, yeah, well, like you said a minute, well, that guy's nuts. He's crazy.
Yeah.
That guy is crazy. He's hearing these voices that are making him do things. That guy is just crazy. And I've always said, wait a minute. Okay, I'm open enough to hear the crazy theory. That's fine. But there is this other side. Maybe this person doesn't have, or what we construct in our society today as a chemical imbalance in the brain. Maybe, like you just said a second ago, maybe he does have a condition that allows his brain to open these doors and hear these voices or live these other lives as far as like a multiple personality type person would be. Maybe they have what we've defined as people is that that's wrong.
It puts us in a tight spot.
Yeah.
Because what happens is if this person is, you know, experiencing things that will be considered normal, another, you know, like 5-10 million years from now, right?
Mm-hmm.
If this person is like at the beginning steps of that, because when we all first started, by the way,
mm-hmm.
nobody had eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Eyes were relatively new, a couple of 100 million years into the evolutionary process.
Yeah.
So nobody had eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, for example, there's this new thing, and it's going to happen 100 million years from now. We don't. In time as we experience it,
mm-hmm.
We don't know what it is. How can this person live in our currently structured society that way?
Exactly.
The problem is society is structured how it's structured, right? And it happens,
yeah.
And you've got to do your things. You've got to go to work. You've got to not hurt people. You've got to, you know, only have the stuff that you can acquire, you know, legally. You know, you can't acquire mm-hmm. things illegally. You can't do things to other people that are bad. You know, there's certain rules and laws
yeah.
and things like that. And then there's people who can't, who perhaps find it difficult because they see things and hear things and know things differently than we do,
mm-hmm.
right? So they lock them up in an asylum, or they put them in a hospital,
or they drug them up, or jail, and they keep them on lithium,
yeah. and there you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You're cured.
Yeah.
Extremely well put. How were these people treated? Ask ourselves. Look back in history at so-called primitive societies, ancient societies. Usually they were considered very special, even
mm-hmm.
holy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how do we treat them? You know, we fill them full of Librium and off they go.
Right.
That sort of thing, you know, and it's it's our society falls considerably short. The problem with our society is that we you know, how do we do this and still support the enormous population we have, you know?
Yeah.
Without mass societies, it's called in sociology. You know?
Well, the scariest part, though, too, Paul, is that, you know, it seems to be happening to younger and younger kids the longer we go. The younger a child is, you know, I mean, this just seems to have been happening like in the last 10, 15 years, too. Drugs cure everything. Drugs
yeah.
cure everything. Just drug them up. And he'll be fine, or she'll be fine,
yeah.
whoever may be fine.
That's what they do with kids in elementary school.
And that's what I'm saying. It seems to be getting the younger,
when I was
younger
in elementary,
and younger.
When I was in elementary school, you didn't put your kids on drugs unless it was really, really, really.
Yeah, unless you were out of control.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
in my day, they were still using shock treatments. I mean, I felt like I was working with Dr. Frankenstein.
Right.
And there was, I guess that's come back, but people were institutionalized much more readily than today. And today, as I say, you know, you're right, they drug them up and off they go.
Yeah, and that's this whole idea, though, and I've been saying it for years, it's just that. What are we doing with
our current society does not then support our very own evolution.
Well,
well put.
Well, based on that, then, what about psychics? We talk to psychics very often, don't we, Doug?
We do.
Yeah.
We do. And fortunately, I see them more and more often on television as well.
Why aren't they like?
Although, Paul, you don't have a very good opinion of psychics.
Well, I do. I know that I badmouth them sometimes in the books. But because maybe it's my reporter's instinct, but I'm super cautious. I'm not questioning the abilities. What I question is the interpretation of the abilities sometimes. Now I suppose psychic myself. Maybe it's from hanging around ghosts for 35 years, but, you know, I go into a house, I kind of know what to look for. Maybe, again, it's just through experience. But there are psychics I trust. There are mediums I trust, although I can count two of them in the United States. Maybe I don't know a lot more. But it's, for example, you and I, suppose, okay, Scott, you and I are in a car, all right, and we're driving along a road relatively rapidly, and we see on the right, way up ahead, a pile of something. And I say, okay, well, that's a pile of rags.
Okay.
You say, no, that's a dead muskrat.
Okay.
So we pull up, when we finally get there, and we get out and we look, and it turns out that it really is a dead muskrat.
Okay.
But I say, no, that's a pile of rags. Even though I can see clearly there's a dead muskrat.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's analogous to a lot of the things that sometimes psychics or mediums will do. And of course, psychics and mediums are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they will have often legitimate sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
They'll very often get legitimate impressions that are true. Because when you look at the multiverse, everything is true somewhere. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But I think that they interpret it according to the 19th century seance room idea of what this stuff is. Their minds are not big enough. I think our imaginations are too puny even to start to use some of these impressions that we get, you know.
Mm.
Not that we shouldn't do it, but that's the reason I mistrust a lot of the psychics. Not because they're not legit, but because they interpret things in ways that are far too small, and I've seen them do more damage than good in some cases.
Well, and the bottom line, too, is that everybody's different, too.
Everyone's
different.
Sure.
And, like, you just used a great example. Perception is everything. We're driving along in my Lamborghini, right? We're in my Lamborghini.
Oh, sure.
We're cruising along.
My Maserati, right?
Yeah. You know, we're cruising along, and we see up ahead, and like you said, well, it's a pile of rags, Scott. I'm like, no, it's a dead muskrat. Well, we just right there perceived something totally different.
That's right.
My perception may have been correct in that situation as far as what we're concerned, what we would attribute the term muskrat to. Okay, it's a, you know, little vermin type thing and with a tail. I don't really a muskrat, but that was clearly a muskrat. So yay for me, I get a cookie. Great. But really, what it comes down to with a lot of these things, and this is what I find with psychics too, is the perception is everything, and everybody's different. Therefore, they're going to perceive things differently.
And they also
too.
Have to interpret because when you get a message, I guess it's not like written down.
No.
It comes as
not
a
usually
thought
no,
or a feeling or an impression,
mm-hmm.
and then they have to interpret that in order to put it into words and explain it.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, something might get lost in interpretation as well.
And that's just another way of...
It's a tough job they have.
Well, no, it's not an easy job, and everybody perceives things differently, though. That's the point.
I always thought people are their own best mediums.
Well, yeah.
You know, and... Yeah, because we're the ones with the love connection. It sounds like a 1970s sitcom, but I mean, it's a love connection, but I mean, it's true. And I should tell you, and I'm a Republican for Pete's sake, I'm not a touchy-feely guy, but you know, I used to go charging into these negative cases with, you know, holy water and clergy, whatever the religion of the people happen to be,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But what always works is love. So the worst poltergeists I've ever dealt with have been scent packing simply when people come together, hold hands, love each other, laugh together, and it sounds hokey, but boy, is it ever. What did John Lennon say? All you need is love. It's true.
Yeah, oh, yeah, totally. I mean, see, the thing is that that's the hardest thing to do, too, Paul.
That is so.
It is very hard, yes.
Hideously, absolutely, completely mind-boggling, bizarre.
Yeah.
No, what we've just talked about, because you know how like you hear a song in your head?
Yeah.
The entire day. I'm talking from the moment I woke up at like 1:15 to just before the show when I started concentrating on something.
Mm-hmm.
The song that was going through my head the entire day. I mean, when I was driving, I went to some big office store. and I did all this stuff, but in my head, I kept hearing the song, "What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love."
Oh.
The quantum mechanics at its best.
And I certainly didn't think of it as an experience like, oh, we're going to be talking about that on Ghostly Talk tonight. Mm. You know, but that's the song that was in my head this entire day.
Yeah, it's not a subject that usually comes up and, you know,
I don't usually talk, we don't usually talk about, oh, well, you know, we can battle these things with love. That's not come up before. but I guess it came up today, the day that the world needs now is love, sweet love. That's
yeah.
I'm telling you, that
well,
went
sure
through
it's
my
true.
Head.
Well, it's the hardest thing
yeah,
to do.
There's one guy in a case in Rhode Island, and this is in Footsteps in the Attic, he was... the husband of the girl who was going through a terrible, terrible time with a what could very well have become a poltergeist, and it was what I referred to as a parasite. And these are life forms, in my opinion, that will drop in from other of these bubble worlds, if you wish to think of them that way, and they'll feed upon our energy. And as I say, I think we are being farmed in many cases. So this was the case at this particular house, and she had been through abused as a child, you name it, it had happened to her. Mm-hmm. Vulnerable, weak, etc. The thing just latched right onto her.
Mm-hmm.
There was one point we were down in their basement, and the thing was coming through her, and I knew she wasn't faking it because her hair was standing on end. There was an electrical field around her like you wouldn't believe, and her skin was you know, has goosebumps all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, wanted me to get out of the house, and I mean, I don't deal with these things. I don't trust them. These things are never what they appear to be, and these critters are just, I don't have anything to do with them if I can help it.
Yeah.
So I said, all right, look, Steve, that's her husband. Take her hand. We took her hand. He took one hand. I took the other. The thing backed right off. Disappeared. And he said, you know, Paul, you could have explained this to me for a month, and I never would have gotten it. But just that one act of simply taking her hand really showed me how love can drive this thing out.
Mm-hmm.
That was the starting point for their success.
Mm-hmm.
The thing was attached to the land because they had high tension wires nearby, and the things feed on the electrical system. That's another question I asked.
Mm-hmm.
What's your electric bill? And they said the thing got so frustrated because it could not get to this woman that they literally heard it pacing up and down the hallway in front of their room every night.
Oh, my God.
And then it went after that little girl, but they knew what to do by then, and that was it. And interestingly, I was back there a few weeks ago, and this goes back to the late 90s, this case originally started.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back a few weeks ago. And the thing is, he said, you're not going to believe this. We went out in the yard. The thing, there's only one left. There were two at the time, in my opinion. Out in the yard, the thing is still there. And I could, you know how you're in a room with someone in the dark, and you can feel curiosity or anger or, you know, we're just connected to each other that way.
Mm.
Well, this thing, I could feel bitterness. It knew who I was. It knew what I had done. And it was sulking. This life form, this critter, whatever this is, wherever or whenever it's from,
mm-hmm.
was bitter and sulking. And heaven forbid anybody of the wrong kind moves into that house, anybody who's susceptible to, you know, negative attraction like this, and boy, is it going to be problems, because I don't think you can really get rid of some of these things. You can just put them to bed or, you know, get them out of the house.
Get them away from you, more or less.
Yeah, and to control the situation.
And not let them have any control over you.
That's what I was going to ask you, and this particular being has not left. It's still there.
I also noticed that you haven't used the word demon.
Well, no, I think these things are responsible for our legends of evil spirits, demons, and, you know, any student of folklore will tell you that every story from human history has some grain of truth somewhere.
Mm.
No matter how much baggage it may have put on over the centuries.
Mm.
And I think that our most ancient stories of these things have to do with actually what these things are as parasites. Now, let me ask you, now this is pointed out too in Footsteps in the Attic, the most ancient legends of vampires. Okay, mm-hmm. It doesn't have anything to do with Dracula, you know, or these, you know, guys sucking blood. If you go back to the ancient Middle East, ancient China, and it actually translates from the ancient Babylonian, life-sucking ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
vampire?
That's the original vampire. And I think that's exactly what these things are. I've seen cases, and I wish I were a doctor. I'm happy to say I do have a doctor now who is available to consult and to come on cases with me. And that's a real victory to me.
Oh, very cool.
And you see chronic fatigue syndrome. You see all sorts of health effects from these things, doing what I believe is draining their victims, much in the legends the old vampires would do, you know, and... this is what this is. I really believe it. And I think that these things are probably one of the greatest dangers to human welfare from the family unit all the way up to governments. I mean, I don't want to get nuts with this, because we are responsible for our own actions.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one wonders, can you imagine the nourishment these things would get on a battlefield?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because what happens on a battlefield or at any traumatic event, this thing sends whatever happens that sends out great emotion or great pain or trauma, whatever, creates waves from the viewpoint of physics across space-time. Mm-hmm. Everything we say and do, as it were, echoes across space-time, across all these worlds. And when somebody's there to pick up the ripple, that's when you see a ghost, or that's when you have these things happen. Or that's where a parasite could come through. It's the same process, I think.
That is where I want to stop right there, because I have a very important thing I want to ask you, but I want to do it after we take another break. Okay,
oh,
Paul?
Man.
I'm sorry, but...
I haven't been watching the clock. I've been listening.
I know.
To the
same
chair.
Here.
I know.
But I just happened to look up, and I'm like, okay, all right, because I really want to ask you about that, because this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately. And it ties right in with what we're talking about right now. So, guys, let's take another quick break. Paul, hang tight, okay? We're gonna run with this because I really, really want to ask you this, and I'm dying to, but I'm going to wait like a few minutes for whatever we're going to play here. Guys, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And we're going to be right back after this.
Paul Eno.
Yes.
Somebody, my husband is about 96 years old.
Uh-huh.
And when he died, I planned to bring him down there to y'all.
Uh-huh.
And we just want to make sure that his casket is comfortable. And we want to bring him down there and let him try out some caskets and see which one that'll look nice on him.
Okay, y'all just want to come in and look at them?
He wants to lay in them. And see which one feels the best to him, because he's going to be down there for a long time.
Okay, now who am I speaking with?
Bernice Williams.
Miss Williams?
Yes.
Okay, he can't lay on Miss Williams, but we can let him look at him.
Well, why can't he lay on him? Because, see, he got to get something that he's comfortable with. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks? You think he'll down a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I really think so, man. He wants to come down there and lay in some caskets and stuff. You know, I think it'd be nice. I'm just trying to fulfill his wishes.
Okay, well, if you want to come down and look at some, and maybe you can put his hand on them and feel them and see what they feel
like. Well,
what
they feel like?
Well, most of them have springs on them, normally like a mattress.
No, I don't want them to bounce up out of there, because, see, when them aunts come here from out of town and they get the rack in that casket and he bounce up out of there,
uh-huh.
Oh, no, you're going to run folks out of church.
Well, what church are you going to?
Well, we don't know, because he's in between churches right now. He's in between New Hope and New Pilgrim. And we don't know where we're going to have the fume yet.
Oh, okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, do y'all do flowers?
Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
We don't do them, but we can order them for you.
Well, we want to put the family flower in the casket. Because
on the inside of the casket?
Yes. It don't make no sense for the flower to be on the outside, and he can't smell them.
Well, you know, you can't put them on the inside of the casket. You could take a couple of them off and put in there.
We want to put all of them in there. You take all of them off and put them in the bottom.
Well, if that's what you want to do, you can do that.
And what else do y'all put in the casket?
Nothing, just...
Because he got a little radio that he listened to all the time. Can you put it on the gospel station and cut it on before they bury him where he can have his gospel music and things and put like a pitcher of water in there and some cups?
Yes, ma'am. You and can put some, that in there if you want to.
And he loved them little Debbie brownies with the peanuts on the top. Put some of them in there. Because we just want him to be comfortable.
Do you think he's going to wake up and eat that stuff?
Well, you know, he said that when he dead and things, he, I don't know, hell. Don't start me to lie.
Okay.
I just want to put a lot of stuff in there and just in case he do. Do any of them ever wake up?
No, ma'am, they don't wake up.
Well, you won't know if they're out there on the ship. Well, this, do y'all go back and dig them up and check on them and make sure they're all intact and stuff?
No, ma'am.
Well, who y'all got down there this week?
About 9 people.
Because, see, we want to look at some funerals and see how y'all work. What's the next funeral y'all having?
Wednesday.
And who is that?
Miss Crenshaw.
Lord, they didn't even tell me Miss Crenshaw is that the one from our new pilgrim?
No, it's not.
Oh, who? Which Crenshaw was this?
From Bethel Baptist.
Oh, you talking about, Lord.
Well, I want to talk about that, too, because I happen to share your opinion on that.
What happened to her?
Wholeheartedly.
I don't know.
Oh, I thought that was the other Miss Crenshaw.
Yeah.
I didn't
know. Time like we have to
keep up so much mess in the church. Okay, then, we're going to come down there, and y'all going to let him lay in the casket.
Check all trades,
yeah,
master or none.
Put him in there.
Well, thank you. What's your name, sugar?
Ida.
Okay, Ida.
All right.
Bye-bye.
I'm going over the fence, and I'm not coming back till I find a dead body.
Did you hear that, Paul? With a sample, I said, hey, we're coming back, and then we turned the board back on, and what was playing was the sample, and said, we're not coming back, or something like that. I'm like, whoa, hey, that was weird. All right, hang tight, Paul.
Asking Will to fast forward the break, you know.
Well, yeah. Okay, we need to get back. We need to get back.
Well, that's because I've thoroughly enjoyed
the conversation.
Not only from you know the parts that are on the air and then the parts that are off the air.
Oh yeah.
It's nonstop here.
Well,
it's
yeah.
Amazing.
And we're about to make it a little bit more enjoyable.
I hope so. We're talking to. Of course, this is Ghostly Talk, and we're live on the internet and radio stations
podcasts
now.
Podcasts and radio stations and all this stuff, man.
So we're live all over the place somewhere from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern time on Sundays, and we're in replay on all kinds of fine stations as well. We're talking with author and ghost hunter Paul Eno. Footsteps in the Attic is one of his books.
Faces at the Window.
Yep, Faces at the Window is
and
another.
Man, I thought we were just going to be talking about some hauntings, some ghosts here, and some ideas. You know,
instead we pulled out the shovel.
Yeah, we're hurting right
we're,
now.
We're digging. We're digging in. I mean, this is amazing. This is all theory related to science.
Absolutely.
You know, science and mathematics.
Oh yeah.
So
totally.
Paul is giving us an education of our lives. Thank you so much, Paul.
You're very welcome. I hope it's correct.
Well, here's the thing. Before we went to break, Paul, you made a very, very strong comment, interesting comment that really perked up my ears. And if you know me, I have big ears, and they pop right up when I'm really interested.
They physically do.
They pop right up. And so what you said was, you know, everything you do, you create, let's say you create a ripple. You send this across the multiverse, let's say, and it affects other maybe even your other self, so to say. I've been thinking about this idea a lot lately, because I've been thinking about this idea, and I don't even know if you even consider it, but I've been thinking a whole lot about the term called karma. Mm-hmm. And in my daily life, I've thought about this in depth for many, many hours, and you know, over time, I've come to this conclusion, because I've seen it happen to too many people out, you know, that aren't me. This idea of drawing up bad karma for yourself by doing deeds that would attract or draw up bad karma, so to say. You harm someone else, harm will come to you in one way or another. It may, you know, and it may not even relate to that, but harm will come to you. So, you know, I'm not trying, well, I'm reformed, I'm a better person now. No, I'm still as evil and angry as I was before. But I try to be, I know I've really, everything I do now, like, well, I really like to disassemble that guy right now in front of his girlfriend, because he made me so mad. I go, yeah, but you know what, if I do that, it's going to come back to me in one way or another. It really is. Because I've seen it happen to too many people that have done it to me, that have wronged me in a way. So there's this idea of everything you do in life, it does have this, it will have this, oh my God, see, this is very difficult to try to keep up with Paul. But it has an effect in some way. I'd like to run with this a little bit, I really want to know more about this and what you think about this, and maybe if you agree with me. I don't know if you agree with me or not. So far, so good. No, well, thank you. Is there this idea that there is bad karma that you can draw up on yourself, so to say? I mean, have you seen possibly examples of this, or what is the mechanics of that, the quantum mechanics of that?
Well, again, I think that we all, our ancestors knew this stuff. You mean, I say tomato, you say tomato or something.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's a term, it's a name, karma is a name for a reality. And the way people experience the reality, that's what they may have their own name for it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have seen even the Wiccans have this idea that, you know, if you do something lousy, it's going to come back on you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a basic threefold human understanding of the human condition,
mm-hmm,
that you treat people a certain way, you treat animals, things, whatever,
mm-hmm,
and you have to respond properly, or else it's going to come back on you.
Mm-hmm.
As far as this in cases, I have seen bad things in the form of parasites, as we've discussed,
mm-hmm,
coming back on people who do rotten things to each other because they're feeding the parasites. That may be one explanation for the reason we have that concept, but it's more than that. It's us, too. We have personal responsibility. We can't blame everything on the demons, if you will.
Mm.
And there's that word. Or on the
don't
parasites.
Don't say the D word.
Well, exactly. That was explained, actually. We talked about that briefly on the break, is
mm-hmm,
that the word demon actually is tied to a theology,
mm-hmm,
and you know, a people's way of thinking. So what happens is it's got a lot of baggage. And is there an equivalent on the other side, or in the other realms, or in the other worlds? Is there an equivalent theology?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, again,
that's just another idea of perception. I'm sorry.
Right, that's a perceptionary thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, people are very comfortable with their religions, and I've been surprised. People have told me, you know, play up your theological background, because I'm a seminary graduate, and I never thought of that any relevance to anything. And sure enough, people really respond to what they want to know. What's the relationship between the paranormal and religion? And I think what they're really asking is, I'm a member of a church or a synagogue, is it okay for me to believe in ghosts and ESP and all this?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're
asking. That's the approach you have to take.
They need approval. They need approval that it's going to be okay.
They do. In this society, we're very insecure with ourselves in this society. And you got to remember, you know, even asking, what are most ghost hunters after? Okay, I think basically, philosophically, they're out to prove there's an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
I think down deep. But we're in our society, you know, that's a question that's asked, but in previous societies, the so-called primitive ones, or the ones that I think are more mature, nobody even asked that question. It was obvious. It's like trying to prove there's water. You know, I kind of go beyond. I don't even try to prove there's an afterlife. And I don't even call it an afterlife. It's just life. Because, as I said before, I don't believe in death. I've seen no evidence in 35 years that there's any such thing as death, even for our bodies, and we talked about that previously. So I think we ask the wrong questions in this society, and you cannot get the right answers if you ask the wrong questions.
Exactly.
And as I say, that's why it's the first day of school, and I look to our ancestors. Maybe they didn't get it completely right, but they had the right idea. They had the right experiences. They weren't separated from the earth in concrete jungles as we are.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't separated from each other. And I think that is the key to why we're so screwed up.
Well, and that, yeah, and like we said earlier, Paul, this is the hardest thing to do in life.
It sure is.
Is to love.
In this society, anyway.
It's to love. It's to really, truly love.
Yeah.
It's a very hard thing to do. It's hard to love someone. It is.
So, yeah, it is. So what happens, we become the flotsam and jetsam of the multiverse, and things like parasites come to the dump and start eating us.
Exactly.
That is, in a crude way, that's exactly what's happening.
Mm.
And we're the worst for it. And again, when you see it, and I don't just make this stuff up. I mean, I've seen it in case after case after case, and it really does seem to work, so I think it's the correct approach.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as people come together, you know, I once got rid of the worst poltergeist I ever dealt with by using a joke book.
Wow.
You know?
Really?
I mean, admittedly, the thing had pretty much, you know, they do run in cycles. They get enough to eat, and they kind of wear themselves out, and they go away. Maybe they'll come back in a few years.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular case, there were six of them, I believe. And the woman did everything wrong. This is in New Haven, Connecticut, in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
She had a seance. She had Ouija boards. Everything, you know, to fan the flames, she did, not knowingly.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time we got in there, the place was as close to Hollywood as I've ever seen. There were literally holes punched in the walls. I had must have been a 15-ton leather chair thrown at my head. And
anybody who
says these things can't hurt you, they're wrong. I've been injured several times by poltergeists. Whether it was intentional, I don't know, but I don't, perhaps not. But in any case, we literally had done everything we could. We got a joke book. I went with my friend. We got the woman and her daughter, and we sat around, and we whooped it up for a whole evening. The thing was never seen again.
Okay?
Wow. And so, I mean, positive energy, good feeling, like in that basement in Rhode Island, took the woman's hand, the thing backed right off.
Mm-hmm.
That was when they began to learn they could be victorious over this thing.
Okay, well then,
we don't have to be the fodder. We don't have to be in the dump anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All we have to do is come together. And I think that's the message of the paranormal for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a message of human unity. We can take control. And it's a glorious thing to see.
Mm-hmm.
And we stand together, not just with each other, but with our ancestors and our loved ones who are not dead. And we all stand together as one glorious unit, I think. I don't even know how to put it.
Yeah.
Theologically, I mean, all theologies, I think, get back to this. And I think we know it deep down. And that's why we're so dissatisfied, because we can't do it.
Well, in regards to theology, and this ties right in with what we're talking about. And I've told people this over and over again, too. And this message is out there. Nobody wants to seem to listen to it. We have how many religions are on this planet now? Couple billion.
And they're all fighting with each other.
And they're all fighting with each other.
Well, not all of them, but a lot of them.
A lot of them are fighting with each other. And it just seems so obvious to me. You know, we have all these different interpretations of how people perceive. Let's just use the word this time. We have all these different interpretations of how people perceive God, let's say, okay?
Yeah.
We all see him differently. We've seen, just in artwork over the centuries, we've seen all these different depictions of Jesus and whatnot, of what happened with the crucifixion. Let's just use that for an example, right? There's all, and I mean, these are different artists, right? And this is how they perceive it. Different religions perceive God in a certain way, and they perceive his rules in a certain way. But when you really break it down to its fundamentals, it's all the same thing, really. It's all the same thing. We all believe in this higher power. Why are we killing each other over this?
This is the thing. Is God has made us in his image or her image or whatever you want to say, or have we made God in our image? And the fact that these, you know, these things take on lives of their own. You know, I can just see it. You know, as somebody who was spiritually adept, was helping other people spiritually in some ancient culture, and it developed into a religion, and then things like job security came into it. Priests or whoever it was wanted job security, and the rules began to accumulate. You know, you can just see it growing and growing and growing and taking on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
So the God is somewhere, you know, off in the wilderness someplace, and you have to kind of go back to the wilderness in order to find God, you know. And but this could get into another discussion that could last a day.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm sorry I took it this way, but it ties in, though.
Well, let me bring this
back. It does, yeah.
I understand the karma stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also see how this the ideas presented here would also relate to deja vu.
Oh, yeah.
Deja vu.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, I mean, if things are all going on in any of millions upon millions of other universes, mm-hmm. and so then you happen to walk into a place, you may have already been there in the future.
Sure.
And so there you go. So I understand deja vu. I don't understand reincarnation, how that fits in with
that's a very good question, because, and I often get the question. Again, we have to think of everything in a whole new way, all of reality. Reincarnation, in the classical sense, is impossible, because there's no past and no future in any objective sense. So you can't have past lives because there's no past. What you do have is parallel lives in these different universes all going on at the same time. And we talked before about regression therapists saying people were telling them it was, you know, 2148 or 37 something or some date they didn't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose if you look at it, I mean, a life is a life, parallel or past, it's six and one half dozen of the other. But I think, again, reincarnation is a 19th century concept we need to kind of get beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose parallel lives, again, it's, I suppose, the same thing. And you can get the benefits of defeating phobias, for example, which is regression therapists have had a lot of success with,
mm-hmm.
Perhaps by dealing with parallel lives. And a lot of regression therapists now admit that there are many lives being lived at the same time. And I'm happy to see that, because I think that's what's going on. But there's no past, so you really can't have past lives. And that's why you can't have death either, because in order to have death, you have to have time. And you don't have time.
Well,
it doesn't exist in any objective sense.
Okay, all right. Well, all right. I was going to throw this at you, too.
Ow.
Yeah, ow. All right.
What,
I mean, you say that, well, we live in a multiverse. We have many different lives. And like you said earlier, like, you know, our physical body, like we have in this reality that we're sitting here doing this radio show in, it dies. And that really won't have much of effect to the whole ball of wax, so to say, as far as one being. Is that how this kind of works? Is you have all the you are one person, you are one soul or whatever you want to call it, and you have all these different dimensions to you? Is that, am I on the right track here, Paul?
Well, I'll go you one better.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that approaches what we're saying, but it's, we have to get away from, with all due respect to the framers of our Declaration of Independence or to our Canadian friends, the Charter of Rights, there really is no such thing as an individual from this viewpoint.
Okay.
What is the most, if we were talking about religion, what is the most, in my opinion, misinterpreted or even mistranslated verse from the Gospel of Matthew? Love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What does it say in the original Greek? It says, love your neighbor because he is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Very different.
Very different.
Very ancient.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you an example of, I love to speak at universities because the kids always come up afterwards and I feel like Santa Claus or somebody at Christmas. They, I'll sit in a chair, they'll come and sit down, tell me what they want for Christmas, so to speak. Tell them what they want from the multiverse. And they will say, one will say, oh, I've always been, from the moment I met my friend here, we felt like sisters or brothers or whatever. And I'll say, well, this is deep stuff, but at some point in the multiverse, you are each other. You literally are one another. That's why you have this rapport. You can look at any human being in a crowd, and at some point in the multiverse, you are them and they are you. We are one being. This, I think, is the root and essence of theology. It's the root and essence of spiritual growth, happiness, and it's coming together. And I think if we come together and take care of each other, we can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
We can do anything. Because in the end, all you have is God and each other. And we're all, as I say at the end of Footsteps in the Attic, we're all brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, and friends to each other. And I will, I've said this, I've had hospice audiences in tears with this last statement, and rightly so, because I tell them that, you know, no matter how alone you are, no matter how despondent, despairing, if you've lost everything and everyone, you are never alone, and you are always loved. And that is the key to the universe. That whole concept.
That is heavy.
I want to take a baby step here.
I think it's impossible at this point in this conversation.
Well, I know, but I want to take a little baby step.
Yeah.
If we're okay, because I grew up in a religious society.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not necessarily a religious family.
Were you a Jesuit or something?
No, but I did go to the University of Detroit. So before it became
Before
it became the University of Detroit Mercy.
Mm.
So I graduated it doesn't say Mercy on my diploma anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Other than mercy, yes, he's gone. You know, other than that, I've been exposed to religion, and I have some belief system of my own. But what I seem to hear from at least the very very popular religions around here, because these are not the popular religions worldwide. Catholicism and you know, that kind of thing. It's just not popular worldwide. It's just popular around here and maybe in Europe and a few scattered places here and there. So what we hear is that these folks, and it's a wonderful idea, want to eventually become one with God, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed
mm-hmm.
to die, and then you're supposed to be whatever at the rapture thing happens, and he calls you home, right? And you become one with God. That's the idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're already one with God.
Yeah, you know, you really hit the nail on the head. All we have to do is realize it. You know, and if you look back at the most ancient form of Christianity, which is, I think, the Eastern Orthodox
mm-hmm.
of all people, they have that concept. They have the concept that we and they even know a little about quantum mechanics. They'll say, for example. Why do we pray for the dead? What's the Orthodox theology of prayer for the dead? Well, they say because you can help them in their lives. Again, you know, that's
they're
correct.
Living then. Yeah.
Yeah. And
they're not dead.
This is not bad. This is not bad. I think you're right. There is union with God cannot be separate from union with each other, in my opinion. You can learn to pray. And prayer and love too. And when I was a kid watching Star Trek, I was always, I guess I had the same ideas. I would always yell at the screen, "Mr. Spock, love is a state of being. It's not an emotion." All right? And so is prayer. Prayer is a state of being. And I think that, you know, I have a meditation techniques that I've kind of been working on too over many years, which I first learned from the Trappists in Spencer, Massachusetts at the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we can bring ourselves together across the worlds, I think we can become one among the great. I think Gandhi, Mother Teresa, whoever, whether they knew it or not, were together across the worlds, all of them, you know, themselves, so to speak, and that's perhaps the start.
Well,
to discover yourself, and then you cannot forget yourself without discovering yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed a difference I noticed a feeling or a union or I don't know a something a different aura. I don't know how to explain it in words. We had the pleasure of taking out two groups of Catholic what is that, Will?
Youth group.
For the night before Halloween. So this would have been here in Detroit. We call it Devil's Night. Although I'm
two
sorry,
nights before.
Oh, two
yeah,
nights
heard about
before
that.
Devil's
okay.
Night. But it was
actually
Angel's,
it's called Angel's Night.
Angel's
now, yeah.
Night now. Yeah, huh, cute.
Yeah.
But so what happens is we took them out and we went to a couple cemeteries and things like that. And one of the things I insisted upon last year when we did a similar thing with a different Catholic youth group was that before we let ourselves loose in the cemeteries to, you know, do whatever it is we do, take photos and temperature readings and observe things and do whatever we do, that we say a prayer, right? Because I think what that does is that grounds you, reminds
exactly.
you who you are,
yeah.
And I think it helps protect. I really do. That's my own thing. I evidently that's not, I found out later that that's not. A lot of ghost hunting groups don't do
no,
that.
A lot of people don't do
but
that.
I appreciate doing that. I really like to do that, and I like to. And it was really a treat and an honor to be with the Catholic youth groups
mm-hmm.
because the youth group leader, Marilyn, would say a little prayer. And it was absolutely interesting because not only was it helpful,
mm-hmm.
It also changes the it changes the mood. It changes your feeling, your aura, your everything around you. The group of kids, and these are very energetic, like little balls of electrochemical furnaces, right? That's what these guys are. These guys and girls are just like absolutely raring to go about everything. It's so much energy, and it brings them all together for just a few moments, and really changes things.
And it makes them quiet too. That's really
well, cool. And they're quiet for a little bit. Yeah, they're kind of quiet for a little bit too, and they'll stop for a moment. And that's really clever too. I like that. But it does when you're actively engaged in a prayer with all these other people, it really does affect you. I noticed
you,
that
you can feel the presence. And there are people often ask me too. Well, you believe in all these awful parasites. Well, are they good spirits too? And I, you know, whether they're spirits or whether they're physical, I don't know, but. Sure, there are. I mean, there are creatures, there are ancestors, and I have had cases that would draw tears to your eyes with the help that ancestors have given their families, sometimes against parasites.
Mm-hmm.
Very dramatic at times. And it's just, you know, the ancestors, they're part of us too. And I've seen spiritualities transformed by realizing that through prayer and through union with our ancestors. Asians know just what I'm talking about, people from that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But we're kind of the dummies of the modern philosophy, and so we need to have very elaborate
rituals about the dead too. I remember Ghost Month in Sri Lanka and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know what?
Oh man,
this is it.
I could sit here for like another 4 hours and listen to Paul talk.
I know, I could too.
I don't know if I could.
When are you going to be given a thing here in Michigan? That's what I want to know, because I want to go.
There are a lot of question marks here, but there seems to be a lot of interest in these books and you know whatever junk I have to say. So there will be supposed to be a national speaking tour being planned, and I would just say watch the website footstepsintheattic.com, and there's a schedule of speaking, and then I'm kind of taking it easy after Halloween. You can imagine they drag me out every Halloween. I'm well as a wet rag at this point.
I will be at the Tampa
Convention Center in Florida in January 31st, and there will be several other things after that, but just watch that for the schedule of events.
Okay.
I hope to get out to Detroit.
Your site will be linked up to our homepage indefinitely, because that's one of the perks you get of going on Ghostly Talk. You get a free link.
Yeah. Ooh.
Oh, thank you very much, Paul. That they reciprocate.
Well, we do have to say thank you, Paul, for coming on the show. This was not, honestly, what I expected to have.
Not at all. I'm incredibly thankful.
And I'm walking away
a
bigger person, I think, from this conversation with you, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, fellas. It's been a real pleasure.
It has. It's been a pleasure all our own.
And for your next book?
The next one is Turning Home, God, Ghosts, and Human Destiny. It should be out in March.
When that comes out, I want to discuss it with you on the air, if possible.
Yeah, if you'd like to come back.
Call anytime.
Tell your publicist.
Okay.
Schedule me up or whatever they do. I don't know.
We'll take care of that.
Because I don't do that.
Okay, but you can call directly. I've only just signed with a publicist, by the way. All this has happened without a publicist.
Wow. Amazing.
So we'll see what that can do.
Well, put a card in his or her Rolodex for us.
Well, I will. Well, I'm 52 years old. It's now or never.
Thank you, Paul. We really appreciate it.
Footstepsintheattic.com.
And the other book is Faces
at the Window.
At the Window, yeah.
Two excellent
Thank you, fellas, and God bless.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
That was Paul Eno.
I really need a cup of coffee and a honey.
I'm not kidding, man.
We're gonna go. I'm going home. Well, I am home.
You are.
But that was a hell of a conversation.
That was awesome. I have to say, I never expected to have such an awesome conversation.
An eye-opening, mind-expanding experience again.
Paul Eno has earned my respect.
Absolutely, same here.
And my awe at everything that he does and has written.
And I hope you guys are listening. We're listening to what he had to say, too. And, I mean, that's one thing that I've always thought about this stuff. You know,
this was tough.
Karma's a sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And, you know, the things you do will come back on you. That's one thing he's going to verify that.
And it would be bad karma if I didn't say thank you to Paul Eno. Footsteps in the attic.com. Thank you to, We talked with 8-Bit and Zarella.
Yeah, second half hour.
And we talked with Dark Butterfly, Christy.
Mm-hmm. About Bigfoot.
And thank you to everybody in the chat rooms. Thank you to OmniSound. Thank you to Pioneer. Thank you to...
thank you to our parents for having sex back in the 70s. We appreciate that.
Mine were before that.
Oh, actually, thank you to Doug's parents for having sex back in the 20s.
I was in the Mesolithic era, yeah. And thank you all the listeners for tuning in and supporting independent radio and all things independent. And keep it up. Keep it up. We'll be here again on Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday.
For a special show. Check our website at www.ghostlytalk.com.
Grimstone. We'll be back in the house again.
And then, of course, we're back next Sunday from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
With Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
Oh, with the prolific and amazing...
That's going to be...
Amazing author, Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
We're going to take a beating that night, I have a feeling.
Yeah, our streams will be full.
Yes. Because
she is that good.
She is very good. Thank you
so much, everybody, for listening. This has been Ghostly Talk for the first Sunday of September, right?
November.
Yeah.
It ends in ember, that's close. Like October doesn't end in ember. So so the first Sunday of November.
Yes.
And we'll be back on Thursday. Have a great one.
Don't bring any someplace where a man can think.
Keep him away.
Keep those ghosts at the ghostly place.
Right, goodbye.
Corrupt I listen to now.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.